One Man Revolution, Episode 37. Started when I went to whitehouse.gov. I just wanted to hear a little bit of U.S. policy straight from the horse's mouth, and it ended up with a quest that led back to big energy in the guise of energy conservation. Well, the topic of today is energy policy for the rest of us, my friends. Yeah, it's a late night. I had some folks over to help them get into the magical world of podcasting. And unfortunately for me, I decided to put on hold this one-man revolution until I got them set up and situated. So here it is at about 1:15 in the morning. And I'm going to go ahead and get this out of my mind before I hit the sack tonight. Well, I tuned into President Bush. You know, I wanted to hear his radio address, because I haven't heard a radio address out of King George yet. I used to listen to President Clinton's all the time. And unfortunately, for me, I sat down and listened to it. I couldn't find an affiliate here in town, so I just went over to whitehouse.gov. And according to this weekly radio address, today... Actually, yesterday, Wednesday, the 15th, President G.W. Bush, that's King George to you and I, is speaking today before the Energy Efficiency Forum. Now, this is an annual gathering. It's got prominent sponsorship by the United States Energy Association and Johnson Controls. And it's supposed to be an open, it's a forum put on by the USEA, who happens to be a member of the World Energy Council, by the way. The United States Energy Association is a conglomerate, as far as I can tell from their membership list, of a whole heck of a lot of big energy, big oil, and big business. And, of course... Why not have the president come and talk to these guys? Because heck, he is the man when it comes to being a friend to big business. So heck, I thought, I support energy efficiency. Heck, I even use an electric lawnmower to eliminate my contribution of greenhouse gas from two-stroke engines. So I thought, well, here's an issue that King George and I agree upon. Man, was I wrong. So I did a little digging, and it turns out that the whole thing is kind of, let's just say, a gathering of big oil, natural gas, coal, and other energy companies that all have us by a stranglehold. And all the discussion about renewable energy and making efficient use of energy, well... It's just a way to appease those of us that look at a way, through alternative energy sources like biodiesel, hydrogen, solar, wind, to unhook ourselves from the dependency on foreign oil. It's just a way for these people to say, oh yes, we support all of this environmental stuff, but what we really want to do is open up the land so that we can, go up and up into the tundra and start drilling for oil out on that federal land, Well, I'm going to play you the clip of Bush's radio address, and I don't know if you guys hook in and actually listen to this. So here's here's the section of Bush's radio address that I got off of whitehouse.gov, publicly available. Since I couldn't find a station here in town, and since I looked on theirs, they don't actually have a way for you to look up what stations it's on. So I just grabbed it off of the online source and recorded it myself. So here's his energy and conservation portion of his weekly address.
On Wednesday, I will address the Energy Efficiency Forum here in Washington and renew my call for Congress to act on the energy plan I proposed 4 years ago. Today's high energy prices are like a tax that drags on our economy.
All right, so when I first heard that part that said...
Today's high energy prices are like a tax that drags on our economy.
All right, that got me, but the part that I really wanted to hear was this one right here. Let's see.
Here in Washington, and renew my call for Congress to act on the energy plan I proposed 4 years ago.
All right, so energy plan he proposed 4 years ago. So I ran out to the web and looked for any type of documentation of 4 years ago and energy policy coming out of President Bush. Now, what did I find? Well, I found in the San Francisco Chronicle, Thursday, May 17, 2001, a text of Bush's energy speech in St. Paul, Minnesota, where he unveiled his energy policy. Well, I'll put a link up on the site for the complete text of this, so I'm just going to paraphrase a few things here. First of all, it's a three-part energy plan, and they are as I quote, first, it reduces demand by promoting innovation and technology to make the world a leader in energy, in efficiency and conservation. So, reducing demand by innovating and using technology to make the United States a world leader in efficiency and conservation. All right, well, that sounds like a lofty goal, but maybe that's a good one. Second, it expands and diversifies America's supply of all energy sources of oil and gas, clean coal, solar, wind, biomass, hydropower, and other renewables, as well as safe and clean nuclear power. Sounds good. And third, and finally, the report outlines the ways to bring producers and consumers together by modernizing the networks of pipes and wires that link the power plant to the outlet on the wall. All right, so Bush has this plan and this idea back in the year 2001 that depends on somehow getting us to innovate and use technology, diversify our supply of all sources of energy, and have a way to get that all to market so that the electricity comes out of the wall. All right, well, let's continue on with what he said in his speech on Saturday, the 11th of June.
Today's high energy prices are like a tax that drags on our economy. We must ensure that American families and small businesses have access to a reliable supply of affordable energy. My energy strategy will lessen our dependence on foreign oil by encouraging conservation, promoting domestic production in environmentally friendly ways, and funding promising new sources of energy such as hydrogen, ethanol, and biodiesel. It will also modernize our aging electricity grid. The House has passed a good energy bill. Now the American people expect the Senate to act. For the sake of our economic and national security, Congress needs to get a good energy bill to my desk by August.
All right, so we have that he wants the energy bill to his desk by August, and, hey, that sounds like a great goal. So I continued reading into this energy policy that he had. It says, thanks to new technology, it can mean doing better and smarter and cheaper. I think that might have been something that was off the cuff for the president. Well, so I continued to read through, and it says, America today, this was in the year 2001, imports 52% of our own oil. If we don't take actions, these imports will only grow. As long as cars and trucks run on gasoline, we will need oil, and we should produce more of it at home. New technology makes, now here's the important part, that in 2001, and he's still here in 2005, makes everybody just go insane. New technology makes drilling for oil more productive, as well as more environmentally friendly than it was 30 or 40 years ago. And then he launches into his studies. Studies like improvements over the past 40 years have dramatically reduced the industry's footprint on fragile tundra, minimized waste produced, and protected the land for resident and migratory wildlife. And he says, those aren't my words. Those are the words of the Department of Energy studied conducted during my predecessor's administration. So he was saying during the Clinton administration that there was a Department of Energy study that was conducted, and I couldn't, I was looking around, and I still couldn't find a copy of that study. But we know how well this administration is at making great, pointing things out. And then, of course, remember, this is all pre-September 11, so there's none of that security stuff yet. This is May of 2001, and everything else happened in September of 2001. All right, so let's see here. Advanced new technology allow entrepreneurs and risk takers to find oil and extract it in ways that leave nature undisturbed, where oil is found underneath sensitive landscapes. Rigs can stand miles away from the oil field and tap the reserve at an angle. And here's the big one. Arctic sites like the Alaska National Wildlife Reserve. We can build roads of ice that literally melt away when summer comes and the drilling then stops to protect wildlife. The ANWR, which is the National Wildlife Reserve, can produce 60,000 barrels of oil a day for the next 40 years. What difference does 60,000 barrels make? And this is President Bush speaking, remember. Well, that happens to be exactly the amount we import from Saddam Hussein's Iraq. This is prior to September 11. This is May 17, 2001. And he is making and drawing a relationship between an exact number of barrels of oil with an exact number of barrels of oil under Iraq, okay, imported from Iraq. Think about that for a second. I'll come back. You know what I'm thinking, don't you? Yeah, I am. I'm thinking that. It says, we're not just short on oil. We're short on the refineries that turn oil into fuel. So while the rest of our economy is functioning at 82% capacity, our refineries are gasping at 96% capacity. I don't know about you, but I visited Newark. I have visited areas of this country where we do some of our oil refining, like near Houston. And I don't want an oil refinery near my house. I mean, let's think about it. It's a horrible, thing to have near anything. First of all, it's dirty. And second of all, it's this big, huge thing that takes up a lot of land to really refine out and benefit a very small amount of people monetarily. Now, he says a single accident, a single shutdown can send prices of gasoline. Remember, this is in 2001. Can send the prices of gasoline and heating oil spiraling all over the country. Think about that. This is 2001. It says, a single accident or a single shutdown can send the prices of gasoline and heating oil spiraling all over the country. I remember back in 2001, gas was not that expensive. Today, because we have basically, because of our actions in Iraq, eliminated the oil production of that country from importing those 600,000 barrels a day, that our gas prices have seemingly doubled. Now, don't look at me. I'm just connecting the dots. I might be completely off, and I invite anyone from the Department of Energy, I invite anyone out there who has a better grasp on this from the administration to give me a call, to send me an email, or to give me some other information that says that I'm not connecting these dots right. Because I'm taking a speech that was given in the year 2000 prior to the entire, September 11th tragedy, and saying that, the exact number of barrels, because in my opinion, the only reason we went into Iraq would be because, because Saddam Hussein and his oil was needed to be eliminated so that we could force Congress into allowing us to dig in the Anwar Reserve. I mean, it's an exact number. Why would you quote exact numbers between the two? I don't understand why you would connect those two dots unless you were meaning to do something about it. That jumped off the page. It shocked me when I saw that. And hopefully it shocked you. All right. So then he moves on to talk about coal in this 2001 speech. It says more than half the country's electricity is generated from coal. And he would like to fund research into clean coal technologies and basically enact strict new multi-pollutant legislation to reduce the number of emissions from power plants. And his energy plan anticipates most new electric power plants will be fueled by the cleanest of all fossil fuels, which is natural gas. And, of course, our hemisphere and our country does produce rich natural gas resources, which are produced domestically, so that would be a great way to utilize that and do that. Well, so, I mean, he seems to make some great things, but every time I look at this, I'm always trying to look to the guy behind that who's saying it. And so he has all these plans for oil and natural gas and coal, and then the next one is to deal with utilizing renewable energy sources. Remember, this is back in 2001. Our energy plan also supports the development of new renewable sources of energy. It recommends tax credits to homeowners who invest in solar homes and to utilities that build wind turbines or harness biomass or other environmentally friendly forms of power. And then here's the part that gets me. It also removes impediments to the development of hydroelectricity. So that means, and then he just continues on real quick saying it also proposes incentives to buy new cars that run on alternative fuels like ethanol that consume less oil and therefore pollute less. Well, one of the byproducts of burning ethanol is formaldehyde, but we won't go into that right now. So his research might be interesting. But the part that really got me was this real short sentence. It removes impediments to the development of hydroelectricity. In order to develop hydroelectricity, you have to dam rivers. There's no other way to get hydroelectric. Okay, you got to put up a dam and then restrict the flow of that river. Well, we know how well our folks over in the Pacific Northwest, how well that's worked in the past with all of the problems with the salmon. With all of the different native species that utilize those rivers, and the people that lose land or gain riches because that land is now on the side of a man-made lake. So we'll just skip over the weird crafty stuff like that, and we'll continue on. Also, President Bush continues in his 2001 speech, it supports research into fuel cells, a technology of tomorrow that can power a car with hydrogen, the most common element in the universe, and emit only steam as a waste product. All right, so research into fuel cells and tax credits for people who invest in solar, and people who propose, who buy new cars, it says, not cars that have been modified to utilize alternative fuels. All right, so there's all these caveats in the back of all this stuff. Every time I read it, it's like, wait a minute, you know, there's a problem. You know, and this whole idea about research into fuel cells, even the experts say that that is not a solution for today because of the current prices, that it's definitely a research for tomorrow, and meaning tomorrow as in 15 to 20 years down the road, because right now, to produce that much hydrogen, to figure out ways where you can store it safely, to figure out ways, are just not here. We just don't have it yet. All right, so his last section of his speeches were to say, well, not only do we have, we're going to invest in renewable sources of energy, we're going to come up with more efficient uses of that energy, but he also wants to have an interstate electrical grid. Okay, and he based that on Dwight David Eisenhower's idea of creating a modern transportation system from one side of the country to the other. All right, and he says that, you know, our highways of 80 years ago, he compares our highways of 80 years ago to our electrical system. And he says that, you know, what we really need is, instead of having dozens of local electricity markets which are haphazardly collected together, we want to take those and connect them all up so that there are fewer companies in control of our electric power. That's the way I read it. The what he says is, well, a weak link in California's electrical grid makes it difficult to transfer power from the southern part of the state to the north, where blackouts have been worse. Remember, in the year 2001, there were a lot of rolling blackouts in up in California, and they had lots of problems. So he kind of preyed on that idea by saying, you know, the blackouts, you know, were so bad that if we just had this one little thing, this interstate electrical grid, where basically the power would flow free around the country. Okay? And he wraps up his speech with, and finally, we must work to build a new harmony between our energy needs and our environmental concerns. Too often, Americans are asked to take sides between energy production and environmental protection. The energy plan that he lays out for the nation to harness the power of modern markets and the potential of new technology. It looks like today's energy problem sees tomorrow's energy opportunity. It addresses today's energy shortages and shows the way to tomorrow's energy abundance. Now, when he says environmental concerns, that one struck a nerve with me. So I did a little looking into things, and I seem to remember a greenhouse gas and link to global warning that was edited out of a 2002 draft published by the Office of Government Climatic Research, called Our Changing Planet, where it has been proven, or at least it has been alleged, I won't say proven, that Philip A. Cooney, who was a senior Bush administration official, removed or adjusted descriptions of climatic research. This came out on June 8th. And it talked all about that, and there, I'll put links to the articles. And it talked about how, yeah, global warming really isn't a problem because of the way that Cooney edited the memos for the executives, that basically, it's not a big problem. Well, on the 10th of this month, that's 2 days after, the chief of staff to Bush's Council on Environmental Quality resigns. His resignation came 2 days after the documentation revealed that he had repeatedly edited government climate reports in ways to cast doubt on the link between greenhouse gas emissions and rising temperatures. Mr. Cooney has no scientific training, and he has long considered his options following 4 years of service to the administration. So, in other words, he decided to move on with a swift kick in his ass once this was found. And lo and behold, yesterday, the 15th, ex-Bush aide who edited climate reports joins ExxonMobil. Very interesting. White House staff who edited will go to work for ExxonMobil this fall, the oil company said today. He resigned as chief of staff on Friday to President Bush's Environmental Policy Council 2 days after documents obtained by the New York Times showed that he had edited reports in ways of do that. Interesting. You know, I just can't trust these guys. I just can't trust them. Can you guys trust them? I mean, you guys make up your own opinion. I'm just offering some evidence here yet again. And then after I read that, I said, well, I wonder who's on this this U.S. Energy Association, United States Energy Association. And I started looking through some of their documents. And, well, lo and behold, their documents that were on their website, which I'll put a link to, says that they want to enhance energy supplies, encourage energy efficiency at and affordable prices, and promote energy technology and long-range initiatives for research and development, balance energy use and environmental concerns, unify energy policy process. Well, I'll be doggone. They're the exact same things that the president has for his energy plan. You know, come on, folks. How stupid do they think we are? Come on. I know that we're probably just stupid. Or maybe I'm just making maybe I'm just making a connection that's not there. But let's look at the board members of the United States Energy Association. And remember, this is also a U.S. member. The U.S. member committee of the World Energy Council. And oddly enough, the World Energy Council's goals are the same as these goals, which are the same as the president's energy plan. You know, let's look at the members of this USEA. Oh, someone from the chairman of the board is from the Potomac Electrical Power Company. Let's see, we've got Jim Adam, PJ Jim Adam from Black and Veatch, which is a company that builds gas and oil pipelines and other engineering for that type of stuff. Oh, we've got the American Petroleum Institute, the Nuclear Energy Institute, Global Energy and Mining Group, American Electric Power. Oh, look, Conoco. The North American Electric Reliability Council, the National Mining Association. Oh boy, I don't see any conflicting interests here. Oh look, the National Mining Association, the American Gas Association, General Electric Company, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, Texaco, Electric Power Research Institute, and the Cambridge Energy Research Associates. And then members of the working group, well, we got a couple of Nuclear Energy Institute, American Petroleum Institute, a couple of those, American Gas Institute, the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association, Edison Electric, and American Gas. So to me, it looks like we got an entire board made up of, well, big oil, big gas, big power, big electricity. You know, all the people that could get the job done, of course, and I know I'd be stupid not to say, well, these are the guys that can make this policy work. But I'd also have to say that these are also the guys that benefit most from these policies going into effect. So every time I think that I can find an issue that I can get behind in our current administration, I get kicked square in the balls with the shocking reality that we are as a collective need to band together and revolt against the control of our energy policy by those who put their own interests and the interests of the few before those of the human race, the people, and the planet. All right, this was eye-opening to me, you know. And then tonight, while I've been sitting up trying to decide whether or not I was going to do the podcast, I was flipping channels and I came across C-SPAN, and there he is standing up there. There's King George standing in front of the energy efficiency forum at their annual gathering, giving his speech, and most of it was word for word lifted directly out of, and I can't wait for the transcript of that one. And what I'll do is I'll take both documents and I'll bring them into Acrobat, and I'll have it do a comparison, or I'll bring it into Word and have it do a comparison for changes. And let's see exactly how much of those two documents have changed. Whether what he said word for word in 2001 is exactly what he's saying word for word today. Now, of course, that can be said that he's just reiterating his policy of 2001. All right, fine. Well, it's been 4 years. A lot of things have happened since then. The priorities need to get shifted and changed to allow for changes. You just can't sit still. I'm sure something has happened, okay, within the time, these last 4 years, to change what happened, what the policy is, or what the plan is. And, of course, if you questioned him on it, he'd probably just say, oh, well, we haven't gotten anything done, therefore we need to get this done now. You know, so that is interesting to see that this exact same goals, the exact same things from 4 years ago still have not been done. That tells me that he is very ineffectual in getting any policy done. The only thing he's been effective at is an undeclared war, sending thousands of people to their death and tens of thousands of people, okay, tens of to their injury in the holding of a land for 600,000 barrels of oil a day to either choke them off, which I have a sneaky suspicion that's what it was for, or so that the policy would have to change what happens in the Anwar, or to just go in thinking that we could just take that oil and not have to worry about it, or just to allow for the big friends to build a little pipeline between Turkey and one of our other friends up there, Afghanistan, which we sort of kind of are still occupying. And while I was looking through this, I did look at the World Energy Council, and strangely enough, the only country that is within that line from Afghanistan to Turkey that we do not currently have a major conflict with is Iran. They are actually listed in the World Energy Council as one of the member countries with a current member listing. All right, so I thought it was kind of interesting to see that, you know, that they got with the program and did exactly what we wanted them to do. And, you know, there you go. So, like I was saying, I looked in here and I found Iran, Islamic Republic, is a member nation. So, they're a member nation of the WEC, and we didn't invade them. Okay, and if you look on the map, it's a direct line from Turkey through Iran to Afghanistan. So, and Afghanistan and Iraq are not listed as member nations of this energy group. Okay? And again, I will put a listing of these websites up within the show notes, which I have here. Now, let me shift gears. I am a big enthusiast of alternative energies, and I know I'm here near the end of my show. And to remind you,
You are listening to One Man Revolution with your host, The Revolutionary.
You're listening to One Man Revolution here with me, The Revolutionary. And I am looking here, and I'm a big, like I said, big enthusiast, big enthusiast on alternative forms of energy. Actually, I have a list of, I've always wanted to build an electric sports car. I would love to take the small frame of a two-seater sports car and convert it thoroughly over to a high-performance electrical vehicle. Well, the only thing that's holding us back is battery technology right now, that we don't have the battery technology outside of the current lead acid batteries that we have to store that type of energy. So without a good shot in the arm over the current lead acid cells, we really don't have a viable source. Although the Toyota Prius hybrid, the Insight, which is now no longer available from GM, and several other vehicles that were what are called low-emission hybrid vehicles, the Honda vehicles, which are very, very good, very economical, and they even look like regular cars, and they've been solving lots of problems. But notice that American car companies have been not necessarily, I mean, Ford had an Escape, which is a little SUV that was a hybrid. They're re-releasing it. It was out a while back, and they also had a Ranger that was electric hybrid that they took off the market. They were one of the first to bring them to market and one of the first to pull them, and now they're bringing them back because of demand and seeing that they're being knocked out by the Japanese companies. So, longtime fan of electric cars and electric sports cars and the idea of an electric vehicle. And this past weekend, I was watching one of my favorite shows called Trucks TV with Stacy David. I had the opportunity to meet with and speak to Stacy David a couple of years back at a SEMA. SEMA show out in Vegas, and he is one of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. And Stacy, if you do hear this, I'd appreciate any feedback. I was that goofy guy in the glasses that shook your hand, and we talked for like 20 minutes while you were trying to get a Hemi Magnum out of Dodge. So he had a show this past weekend on biodiesel. And I couldn't find the site that he had linked to, so I had to look around and around and around. And for $3,000, you can get a complete do-it-yourself biodiesel refinery facility. It's several plastic tanks that allow you to very efficiently create biodiesel, even in a quarter of your own garage, out of used frying oil. And the frying oil is not a vegetable oil, not like President Bush mistakenly said. It said that it was grease. It's not frying grease, Mr. Bush, President Bush, King George. It's oil, vegetable oil, and that's something that we have a lot of in this country. Just ask anyone who drives by a McDonald's. You're always smelling that frying oil. So I'll put a link to that. It's called Biodiesel Solutions, and they have an entire line of products so that you can build your own biodiesel. Biodiesel is cleaner, better for the environment, because it has lower emissions, and you get sometimes better performance. And I just love those shots that Stacy David had on that show over on TrucksTV.com of the smoking of the tires of a big old Dodge. Okay, big old Dodge pickup truck running on nothing but vegetable oil. All right, refined biodiesel. All right, so I got a link to that. I also have a great source with some dead links on it, of course, from the energyconservationinfo.org. And heck, there's even a great source from the United States Department of Energy, Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy homepage. And I figured why not throw that in there too. So a couple of tips real quick. I live here in the state of Florida, which is extraordinarily hot, and I know a lot of the other countries, or a lot of the other states in the country, sorry, it's like almost 2 o'clock in the morning here. Some of the other countries, some of the other states in this country also are suffering and are going to be suffering over this summer. Set your thermostat to 78. I know you guys are probably up north are probably telling me I'm insane, but every degree above 78 will give you about a 5 to 7% decrease in your power bill. Come when you get your power bill back. I know here I am sitting in the state of Florida and my AC is set at 80 and 82 degrees because I'm used to it. but I know you folks up north. But every degree you save actually saves a lot of oil and natural gas and coal that we don't have to burn. Also, if you utilize your appliances and whatnot after hours instead of during the day, during peak times, it also saves some of the power that they have to produce. Okay, so that's the way I look at it today. The energy policy that the president is currently touting is the exact same policy that he used 4 years ago. Some people might say that that is, I don't know, him sticking to his guns and saying this is what he wants. And others like me say that it's just the president trying to dig in the national reserves and in the areas that have been set aside by people long before us who said, you shouldn't dig there. To contact One Man Revolution, you can email onemanrevolution@gmail.com or on Skype at The Revolutionary. That's THE_REVOLUTIONARY. Or just visit the website at http://onemanrevolution.org. And I know I might not be Jack Sheldon, but I leave you guys with some very important words that I learned when I was a small child watching ABC in the mornings. And you're right, it's right out of Schoolhouse Rock. It's some of the sections of the Energy Song. So I leave you with this. This is Dan Novotnik reporting for One Man Revolution. See ya!
Energy, we're looking to try and find some new kinds of energy, exploring to try and make a new find, nuclear and thermal and solar, if we miss we'll get colder and colder, energy, we're gonna stop using you up, so don't be cross when mama says turn that extra light out, just turn it off till we find a fuel that never runs out. If everyone tries a bit harder, a fuel will go farther and farther. Energy, we're gonna be stretching you out.